What's happening? What's happening? What's happening, blues people? Another Jack Dapper Blues special interview. And, you know, because I've been following this young lady's career for some time, right? And she's a Brooklynite like myself. So there's a special place here for her, right? Also has a Wall Street Journal write-up. But you don't need to hear nothing else from me. We're going to bring her on. Welcome, Miss Mara Kay. What's happening with you?
What's happening? Brooklyn, where we at?
You're right here.
Yes, we are. We are right here.
And, you know, when I have these interviews, especially with people from New York, particularly Brooklyn, but New York as a whole, because when it comes to the music that we celebrate and perform, a lot of people came from outside of New York to record there, perform there.
That's right.
Based on history or who people want to cover. So it's really special to me when there's people from there doing it, right? So, and I must say, you do this very well.
Thank you. That means a lot to me.
Now, with that being said, how do we get here?
Well, I think I found out I could sing when I was 10. And then I started training and learned classically. And my grandfather, God rest his spirit and soul, was a beautiful singer. His name was Murray Kay. We have the same initials, actually. And he, it was really him that inspired me to sing. It was him whose voice I heard first at my family reunions when I was too young to really know anything except for the fact that there was this lobby with couches and my grandfather's voice was bellowing through the lobby. And everybody was singing along with him. And my Uncle Eddie was playing the guitar and everybody knew the words and they were these old songs. And there's this this feeling that you get when you hear someone just open their spirit like that. It hits you different. And I'm pretty sure that is my first memory of really understanding what it meant to connect with people and share this unspoken feeling, unspoken spirit that just comes through. And then I wanted to learn more jazz songs because he loved jazz, Mel Torme, he loved Ella, he loved Billy. And so I would come to him and say, oh, I found the song. But I think I was 4 years old, and it was my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary. And he pulled me up to the mic. I was this little tiny boob. I was like nothing. And I was so shy. I was the shyest little girl, which is funny because I am so loud now.
I was about to say, I don't see shyness anymore.
Brooklyn girl, can't keep my mouth shut. But he called me up to the mic to sing the song that he used to sing with me called Side by Side. And I was so nervous and I'd never done anything like that before. I was this small and I got so scared. I sat down Indian style, cross-legged, excuse me. And he just sat down next to me and put the mic and he said, let's sing. So I didn't really have a choice. You know, the whole family's there just taking it in, oogling at me. And I remember sitting there. I remember being that small and sitting there and I have a photo of it. So whenever I lose sight of myself, I remember that moment and how it really kind of propelled me. But how I got to the blues is a little different because I had this love for jazz. And then I studied theater in high school and college. And so there's this this aspect of storytelling that is so important to me when I sing. And I think that really began for me in the theater. And then I got to New York and auditioned a bunch and did a few cool things. You know, I did SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical. in Asia. Go figure. Mostly, you know, auditioning was like waiting for someone to tell you you were good enough to do something. And so I just started singing. I started singing and playing out at this little bar across the street from my house in South Park Slope called Buttermilk Bar. Mm. And I went through all the songs I loved to sing that I never sang out. So I collected all these Ray Charles songs and Stevie Wonder songs and Billy songs and Ella songs. And I had these two Victoria Spivey tunes.
Mm.
And I never heard of her before, but someone passed me these two songs. And I swear to you, I've never been the same. It was Detroit Moan and Any Kind of Man. And I had never, in all of my time singing and listening to music and loving music. And also I grew up in Brooklyn, so I love hip hop too. Like, know that about me. Lauryn Hill was the first CD that I ever bought for myself. You know, like I learned to riff from Lauryn Hill.
I don't know if I'm dating myself. I don't think they use this term anymore, but the hip hop swag is kind of obvious and evident how, you know, your mannerism and how you're talking, but go ahead.
I don't know what you're talking about. but thank you. I listened to this woman and I had the chills all over my body, and I'd never heard anyone sing with such grit, such ferocity, such rawness, such honesty. It wasn't sugarcoated.
Mm.
I love jazz, but it's sweet.
Right, right.
The blues does not fake anything.
Right.
And I loved it so much. Like, hit me to the core that I couldn't stop singing this song. And then had to find more music like that. So because of Victoria Spivey, I found Bessie Smith. I found Mamie Smith. I found Robert Johnson. I found Memphis Minnie. Woo.
She's on the back wall.
A hero, you know, to the end of my days, I swear. The things I've learned from listening to these heroes, especially these strong women of the blues, I'll never be the same. And I'm so grateful for that day that I got that Victoria Spivey tune, because that's the singing I want to hear, and that's the singing that I want to do. That is that form of expression that is so deep and so to the core.
Right.
And storytelling at its finest. I mean, I've never heard storytelling like this in my life. Truly.
So you find Victoria Spivey, which, I mean, a hell of an introduction to the blues, right?
What? The queen of the blues just came marching into my apartment and was like, hey, this is how I do it. I was like, okay, queen, go off. Go ahead. And I will listen to you 80,000 times just today.
Wow.
Just over and over again, trying to hear what she's doing. Why she's making the choices she's making. Why she's bending that note. Because it's not because it sounds good. It's because it tells the story better.
Right. So what were you singing at that moment? Just covers that you like from a plethora of genres?
No, it was really jazz and R&B. And
particularly jazz and R&B.
Yeah, like soul music, you know.
Well, jazz could be soul. But, you know, jazz is, I'm going to get in trouble for this, but it could be equivalent to like classical, right?
Sure.
Because it's and I like jazz, don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah, jazz is blues.
It's beautiful.
If you really want to take it there, jazz is actually blues with a brass instrument.
Well, of course it is.
Right.
But everybody knows that.
And you'll be surprised.
I know.
But you know, it's like you said, you said sweet. That's Brooklyn. That's Brooklyn of you to say that.
Is that?
I would say it's just more, you know, calm, right? Yeah. and neat, right?
Yeah. Clean cut.
Right. The blues is real gut bucket, right?
So yes.
I guess the first thing I want to ask you, and we spoke off air, you know, so you know I'm not coming sideways. What was your fans, the audience, and your friends and fellow musicians' response when you was like, yo, hold on, no, I don't want to do, I want to sing Victoria Spivey. I want to sing Ethel Ward, you know, all these people.
You know, I think... I'm grateful that I have people around me that are supportive because I'm happy, because I'm doing something that brings me joy, that allows me not only to feel that joy, but to share that joy. And to be honest with you, it wasn't until I started singing the early blues and honoring these phenomenal women, especially, that I really felt the most myself, that I was able to find my voice. And, you know, as a singer, it's years. I'm still discovering things about my instrument. But there's something about this music that hits me in a way that I cannot explain. And just it pours out of me. And I think that feeling is the feeling that translates. And I think that when people hear this, hear me singing, it's the sound that's familiar that they don't know. And once they hear it, they don't leave, and they want to know more. And then they want to know how I found this music and how I got started singing and why this music. And it becomes this beautiful conversation that continues after the musical conversation that we've had for, I don't know, an hour and 2 hours, where I've, you know, cherry picked these songs that really speak to me in a way that I can express.
Now, I have to ask you this.
Yes.
You may not remember this moment, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
Okay.
And...
Uh-oh.
I don't know if I remember your response. You're putting together a performance.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me and a couple of people, what do you think I should sing that I could sing? I gave you a song. I should have went back. Matter of fact, I may go back while you answer this and check what the song was. What I do remember you saying was, I don't know if I could pull this one off.
Mm.
But I do believe you ended up singing it and pulling it off, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I remember. This was the live stream. This was during the pandemic. And it was a lot. It was during one of my live streams where I was doing a request hour.
Yes.
Was it Big Mama Thornton that you passed me?
I'm going to check.
I think it was I am a woman.
I think so. I'm checking right now. Unless Facebook is not working anymore, because we know what ended up happening.
And what a gift that was, honestly. I felt so free today.
Correct.
What a world. What a world we live in.
Yes. I don't understand why 25 Maracay's is coming up.
That's horrifying to me too. Don't tell me that. I do not need to hear that.
No, wait a minute. Okay, hold on. I didn't want to go up here, but I want to remember the song. But what I do remember is, even though you said that, I was like, yes, you can. You did it, and you nailed it. What? So I'm asking you this. I bring this up because I would like to quantify, I guess, understand.
Mm.
What, when you're going through songs to sing and perform, makes you say, well, this one is not for me, or this one is a big challenge, but I will accept the challenge. What inspires these decisions?
It's the story, really. It's always the story. I mean, you look at lyrics like, I want cake when I'm hungry, lightning when I'm dry, some good man to love me, and heaven when I die. I'm sorry. Does that not hit you somewhere different? And does that not express this feeling that we have? So I'm not sure why the song that's called I Am a Woman was a difficult choice for me to make as far as being able to tell the story. But I did it. I was like, well, Jack Dabba Blues thinks I can do it. I'm going to do it because he asked for it. And that was enough for me to do it. I had your vote of confidence, basically. So,
you know. You knocked it out the park.
Well, I didn't ask. Thank you. Thank you.
So now, you perform sometimes with a trio, mm-hmm. sometimes with a guitarist, and then you have, I was listening to a couple of your tunes just now with a piano player.
Yes.
Break down some of these composite, these musics in regards to what is this with feeling? How do you know, or where do you go? What is your thought process when you're saying I want to perform? Is it who's available? Is it deliberate to do these things?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think typically the comp instrument is someone that I really trust and that I have a special energy with. And ultimately, I think depending on the show, you know, if I were honoring the country blues, I would certainly make sure I had a guitar player with me or a banjo player. Piano would be cool, but if I were doing more classic, really classic blues, you know, more like Mamie Smith, I would certainly make sure I had a piano player. That's not to say if I had the budget to have the biggest band, I would have the biggest band I could always have, you know, but as much as we love to play, you know, people don't like to pay us that much. So I have to, you know, I make do with what I have, and I'm grateful that I have wonderful people around me that really move the same way I move to this music, and it drives them in the same way. And I've been lucky enough to be put in environments where I'm able to connect with people that really fuck with this music in the same space, so we can all build. I've met some of the greatest people of my life through singing the blues. Truly.
Yes, absolutely. There is another aspect, right? That we have. If I don't ask you, then I won't be keeping it 100 to the platform.
Come on, I know it's coming. Come on.
So there's a lot going on in a couple of these blues forms and groups, right? Mm-hmm. You have, I cannot even remember this gentleman's name. He's a guitarist. He's a white guy. And he had a Confederate, he had like a Dukes of Hazzard car.
Yeah.
Right. This kind of brought back an onslaught of this debate. No white, no black, just blues, or sure. All this other stuff.
Sure.
First and foremost, the first question I have to ask you, mm-hmm. have you and do you face any pushback from anyone singing as you sing the blues?
I have to say that I haven't received that pushback, and I'm grateful for that. But I also have to say that I've certainly put in a lot of time to educate myself, not only on the history of this music and its importance, because of the history of this music and what this music stands for and how important it is that these stories are still told, because it is so unfortunate that this history is still happening today in many ways. And I think that's so important when approaching this music, is to really know who sang these songs and why they sang them. To have that deeper understanding allows for it to not be a surface level. Oh, I think I sound good on these songs. But I have to say, it just hits me in this way where I can't really explain it, but I have to sing it. And I'm not doing it to get the credit to be, you know, this person, I'm not even trying to be a blues singer. I just love to sing this music. Hits me in a way that no other music has. And as an artist and a creative being and someone that is compassionate and as understanding as I can be about a subject that doesn't apply to me in that way, I can't help it. And I just love it. It means so much to me. And you can be sure that every time I play a gig, I tell people every song I'm singing and who sang it first. Just this weekend, I played a gig to a bunch of blues fans. And I said, this next song is a Memphis Minnie tune. Raise your hand if you know who Memphis Minnie is. And nobody raised their hand.
Mm.
And I said, this woman is incredible. I said, all of the music you love today, the blues you love today, came from her. All of these songs that I'm singing came before the music, all of the music you love. Sister Rosetta Tharpe was the godmother of rock and roll. You like rock and roll? You loved her. So my goal, my hope, is that after you spend time with me sharing these songs, these stories of great importance and meaning, that you go home and you spend time with Memphis Minnie and you spend time with Mississippi John Hurt and Robert Johnson and Ida Cox and Sippy Wallace. And you listen to their stories firsthand. So it doesn't get lost. So it keeps.
Let me ask you a question. I have to ask you a follow-up question.
Sure.
It may be slightly biased.
Okay. Keep it Brooklyn with me, man.
All day. You know, I preference it like this. I won't preface that way because I don't remember her name. Somebody I interviewed, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you? So this is kind of hard. This may be a hard question, okay. Right? But I want you to answer it, even if there's backlash. Do you think because? And when I say how you approach it, not just with respect for the culture and the music, but blues and jazz and R&B, put that aside.
Mm-hmm.
You're honoring the craft of singing first and foremost.
Certainly.
Right? And then what I receive from when I watch you sing, you're singing like Mara, not like someone else.
That's right.
Do you believe, or would you think, I guess that's the same thing, right? That's why you don't face the pushbacks where a lot of other people, it doesn't even matter what their ethnicity is, because, you know, I don't want to hear a 20-year-old black kids sounding like an 80-year-old black man, because it just doesn't make sense, right?
Sure.
Do you feel that's why you don't receive some of the pushback other people in your space receive? Does that make sense, the question?
It makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure I can answer that. I can just know that the way I sing allows for this channel to open within me of joy, of connection, of sharing. And that's all I can continue to hope for and do while singing. I try and remain as informed as I can be. And hope that my genuine love and respect for the craft, for singing, for this music, for the people that came before me that sang this music, that paved the way for all of the music we listen to today. If I can just do that genuinely and authentically for my, within myself, and be true to who I am through that, without being disrespectful to anyone else, then what else can I do? How'd I do? Is that okay?
I mean, if, yeah.
I did, you know, I love to sing. I love to connect. I don't think there's a deeper way to connect than with this music.
Right. Right. Well, no. And unfortunately, everything doesn't boil down to some of the questions that I've asked you, right?
Sure.
Sometimes it just really boils down to connecting to the music and, yeah, and expressing the music.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of expressing the music, for young ladies coming, even young males coming up that aspire to perform and sing. And do you play an instrument?
I don't. I'm learning. I'm learning how to play guitar. I can play the blues and C on guitar now. So I've been working on Got to Make a Change, Memphis Mini, and accompanying myself.
That's a tough one.
It's a hard one. I'm sad and blue, lonesome too. It's such a bossy song. And like, shouldn't we make change if we got to make a change? And like, she's talking about her man, but like, doesn't that translate? Like,
when you make a
change, you gotta make a change, right? You can feel that. And when you don't, you feel that too. That's why I love it. Right? Because like, she's talking to me and the message could be different every day, depending on what I'm going through.
Correct.
And that's
it's still awesome. Make a change.
Yes. Yes. I can play a little bit of the kazoo.
Really?
A little bit of bass drum. It's not my forte, but I'm learning. I like to tap when I'm singing. I like to like do little heel toe steps. I can't really stand still. So I like
to. Is this from your Mississippi trip?
Excuse me?
The kazoo. Does this come from your Mississippi trip?
I'm not sure that the kazoo came from my Mississippi trip. I think I brought a harmonica with me and just can't play it, but I'd like to learn how to play that too. That would be really exciting. But I'll tell you, even more exciting than the kazoo was that Mississippi trip.
Share with me. Before I ask you what you're going to tell the young upcomers, so why is that Mississippi trip was instrumental?
Well, I mean, you spend time listening to these beautiful spirits over and over again. I spend so much time with them in this portal. I don't know. But the idea that I could be where Bessie Smith once was and be where Robert Johnson once was and Mississippi John Hurt once was made me feel closer, so much closer to them, and made me feel so much closer to these songs that have been so important to me for so long. And it just so happened that the way we were driving was to New Orleans, and we couldn't go, we passed through Memphis, but I really wanted to visit Memphis Mini, and we didn't have time this trip. And so we pulled up on the Riverside Hotel, which is where Bessie Smith was brought after her car accident and where she had passed. And not only that, but this hotel gave room and board to all of the greatest Black musicians there ever was. Ike Turner stayed there. Sonny Boy Williamson stayed there. John Lee Hooker stayed there. Aretha Franklin stayed there. Bessie Smith obviously rests there. And it just so happened that that day that I was feeling kind of down that I didn't get to visit Memphis Mini, this wonderful woman came out the door and said, "Hey, what you doing here?" And I was like, "Hello, just paying my respects." And we got to talking. I was with my wonderful guitarist from Brooklyn, Ernie Papa Vega. And we just got to talking with her, and I started talking to her about Memphis Mini and how I love Bessie and how honestly being here kind of made up for missing Mini. And she goes along to tell me that her name is Z, and her grandmother actually ran this hotel. And her grandmother was with Bessie when she passed. Mm. And John Lee Hooker used to sit on the grass and play guitar for her grandmother all day long. And she'd go, "What? Don't you ever get tired?" He said, "No, Mom, I'm trying to play for you all day long." And she said, "You know, we don't do this. I don't do this. We don't do tours. But since I know what Bessie Smith means to you, I'm going to take you inside." And I swear, just thinking about it literally makes me chilled to the bone. She walked through the hall. She like opened this. It was like a padlock. Like walked through one hall, and there's like a little spinet on the corner, and then like just this beautiful portrait of Bessie. And then she opens this like creaky door, and then there's a screen door. And she said, "Now down this hall, everybody you love, walk down this hall. So your feet are touching the same floor that Ike Turner walked down, that Sam Cooke walked down, that Sonny Boy Williamson walked down." And I was like, "Oh my God." And it's just like this row of rooms, and there's screen doors. Nobody had it like a door. So everyone just like talked to each other across the hall, she said, right, and just shouted at each other and played tunes to each other across the hall. And then she said, "And here, this is Bessie's room. And they have music playing for her." She said, "We always have music playing for her in here." And I said, "Would it be all right if I sang for Bessie?" And she said, I think that would be wonderful. I'm sure she would love that." And I was secretly recording this conversation because the things that this woman was saying was so important that I didn't want to miss it. That I didn't want to miss any of the information. She was, "Don't do that." But let me tell you what happened. And this is how I know that these things are powerful way beyond me. I started singing Downhearted Blues. I'm crying. We leave. Everything, you know, is beautiful. I look at my phone. The recording stopped right when I started singing. Mm. Nobody called me. My phone didn't die.
Right.
I was not supposed to have it. It was a moment in this life that existed where some kind of channel was crossed and that recording stopped. And I've never sweat like that in my life. I've never cried like that. And I don't know if I've sung like that, to be honest.
Well, the spirit was there.
Same.
Can I just add a little bit to that story?
Yes.
The fact that you're in a space that they had to be in because they couldn't be anywhere else. did the lady explain that part of it?
Of course. They weren't allowed. These incredible musicians that were playing and people were so excited to see. We're not allowed to stay in the regular hotels.
Is this a Green Book stop or? Because there's like the Green Book, then there's like word of mouth, only particular people know where to go. Was it a stop along those lines?
That I can't answer. I can send you the recording of her talking. She talks all about it. I would love for you to have it, actually.
Would you really?
I would, yeah.
I would appreciate that.
I would be happy to have a photo with her too, sitting in the front. It's really something else. Yeah. And then Ernie sat right where John Lee Hooker used to sit And I sang Yellow Dog Blues on the grass. Wow. In front of the, I mean, I just like, I can't. Just like so powerful to experience something like that.
Right.
And to know that why that existed in the first place. And thank God some place like that existed.
So after this experience, did you feel or hear or sense any, I don't want to say adjustment, but maybe a shift in your performance and singing? Do you understand what
yes.
I mean?
Yes. Yes. I felt to have a connection to music in that kind of way. And then to be immersed in the environment where that music was paramount. Hits you different. I don't sing the same. I didn't sing the same after that. I felt different in my feet in the ground after that.
Hmm.
We went on to visit Robert Johnson at his gravesite. Sat on the on the steps of the church, saying, "Come on in my kitchen." Then we went to Mississippi John Hurt's juke joint that was demolished in Avalon, saying, "Ain't no telling," just to feel them somehow with me.
Did you make it to, excuse me, Jimmy Duck Holmes spot?
Yes. We hung out with Jimmy Duck Holmes and we played at the Blue Front Cafe. We pulled in, he did not know we were coming, but we had met. So basically the summer before we did that Mississippi tour, I was invited to be a teaching artist at Centrum's Acoustic Blues Workshop and Festival in 2018. And Jimmy Duff Holmes was also a teacher there. And so I had been able to witness him. And I say witness because he's something else.
No, so, I dig it.
And one of the last of his kind. And so for him to just come on in. He like got us a beer. He just like, you know, the TV, his buddies were there. They were giving me shit. They loved that I was from Brooklyn. And it was incredible. I'll send you some stuff from that too. Really just like my heart felt full in a way that I can't. It's like, it's hard to verbalize really. A feeling. Am I right? Isn't that why we play music?
Correct.
Because words become not enough to express a feeling, to express an emotion. And I just felt overwhelmed with spirit. I can't explain it.
Well, it sounds like you explained it rather well. So what would you tell people of any age that has a burn to express musically?
Mm. Well, I think I know when I'm teaching, I ask my students to bring in a song, not that they like to sing, not that they like how they sound when they sing, but a song that they connect to. A song that if I asked you why you were singing this song, you'd be able to answer. And who you might be singing to, you'd be able to answer. And what the song makes you feel. And sometimes they're not ready to know what that feeling is.
Right.
Because I feel, you know, there's so much stigma attached. Listen, the voice is an instrument that lives inside of our body. We don't get to put it away. You put away a guitar, you put away a trumpet. The voice is here. So even when I'm speaking, I'm using my instrument. So that's pretty vulnerable, I would say.
I agree.
Especially if this is truly how we connect, even in speech, how we connect, how we converse, how we express anything is here. So there's a lot of pressure when singing, I think, that's outside of actually why singing is so special. People have stigmas. Do I look okay when I'm singing? How do I sound when I'm singing? But I think the questions are, how do you feel when you're singing? Why are you singing the song? And I think when you start to focus on those things when approaching a song, this wall of protection that we keep, this, you know, armor, starts to crumble. And we can really get to the heart of the matter. And when you can connect here and here, here and here, that's when the story comes through. And that's when people start to actually feel something. We numb ourselves. We like the comfort of where we are. Singing takes us to another level, allows us to connect with others on another level, a deeper level. And that's scary.
Well, yeah.
Step and say, I'm here, I'm singing.
Because it's vulnerable, like you said.
It's the most vulnerable act. But you're also saying, okay, yes, I'm here. And I like to remind people that you're not being graded on this. There's nothing wrong with how you sound if you're expressing yourself. Now, there are ways to shape that. And there are certainly choices to make when approaching a song, and why we make certain choices, and why we bend a note here and just carry a note out this way. But I think first and foremost, it is so important to connect to the song you're singing. Otherwise, there are so many songs in the world to sing.
Right.
Right. Why not choose the ones that mean something to you, or write them?
I have to, okay. So because I could talk to you all day. We're gonna have to, you're about to wrap up, but there's because you fall into a category not many people fall into. There's some. But then there's the others. What is the others? There are those that aren't so warm to the ear, but because they feel what they're saying so much, people feel it too. Then there's some who are on point, on pitch, and on note to a T.
Yes.
But no one feels them.
Mm-hmm.
You are both.
Thank you.
How do you get there?
You pick songs that mean something to you. You spend time listening to the ones that came before you that did it right and did it the best. You spend time with the people that paved the way. I mean, they came first. All this music came before I ever existed. But it translates today in the same way that it did then, because it is such an expression of the soul and spirit that it's like an undeniable feeling. I'd much prefer to hear someone really expressing themselves, not sounding amazing. Who am I to say who sounds amazing? Anyway, you know. Exactly. So, you know, yes, I think there are technically perfect musicians.
Right.
Great. Great. Good on you. You could do it. But it's like, yo, where are you in there? You back right there behind the eyes? That's what I want to connect with people. Music is the highest form of connection and expression. So let's share. Don't just perform for me. Share with me. You know what I mean?
Mm. Don't just perform.
Yahtzee. Yeah.
Nice.
And I think it is important. You know, I've really spent time with these wonderful blues musicians in my own spirit, in my ear. But, you know, I studied the choices Memphis Minnie makes in her singing and where Billy bends. You know, Billie Holiday loved Bessie Smith. She came from that. So it's like all of the greats started somewhere and came from somewhere and then went somewhere. And so if you can study those special things, not take them, but allow that understanding of why they make those choices in the best way that you can without them being here, just by listening. And then feel how that makes you feel, what these lyrics make you feel. Then you assimilate that. And the things that tickle you about that person's choices will sprinkle itself in your delivery without intentionally copying a thing.
Right.
Because it's not yours to take. How they express is different than I would express, than you would express singing the same damn song. And isn't that the beauty of the blues too? Because, you know, the blues in C is the blues in C and the blues in C, but Got to Make a Change is way different than I Want Cake When I'm Hungry is way different than Too Late. And that's three Memphis Mini songs. Correct. That are blues in C.
Correct.
So it is truly about the story. So if you're not telling me a story when you're playing or singing, then like, I'm not as interested. Dare I say.
No, that's the expressive side, because, you know, there's the unfortunate legal side, but we don't want to talk about that right now. Mm. And when I say the legal side, let me just give it some context. Unfortunately, and this was brought to my attention through critical race theory, that there was a I don't want to say a law, but some there was a business practice implemented to where they would have one of these blues singers who had these voice influxes on different notes. Helped them write the song. And they wrote it in the contract to where these notes that came from these vocal inflections cannot be written as composition, so they don't get ownership of or don't get paid off of the composition. Right, and that's why I said in we don't want to talk about legal, because what you're talking about is something totally different.
Yeah,
and I fully understand what you're talking about, because just as not even as a performer, as a blues guy, or none of this stuff, none of this platform, nothing. Just as someone who grew up as an appreciator. Of music and the story. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I agree with you.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. You we're influenced by the things around us, the things we hear, the people we spend time with. So if I'm spending all this time listening to music, what I'm listening to is going to influence how I approach music. And isn't that the joy of being able to share this great form that has so many gifts and blessings upon us?
Absolutely. My most favorite vocalist. I'm going to ask you, do you know who my most favorite vocalist is?
No. Well, maybe it's Memphis Minnie. I'm not sure.
Yeah, she's my most favorite.
I have a poster back there.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Her and Son House. Those are my most two favorite blues folk. Memphis Minnie and Son House. My favorite all-time vocalist is David Ruffin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I thought I was going to be David Ruffin's when I was four.
How's that going for you?
I play the blues.
So it's going well.
Yeah, I guess so. No, it is, but you know, that's his expression. I can't mimic that. But the point I'm making is the more I listened to him, the more I dove into understanding what you just expressed. Mm-hmm. I started hearing Sam Cooke. Mm-hmm. So I say that to say I totally understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful shared thing, isn't it?
Yes.
The way we take care of each other in that way.
That's right.
I'm
just so happy for us finally to do this.
Me too. Big time.
Are you going to sing a quick song?
Oh my God. Okay. I guess I could sing a little bit. I'll sing a little of I Want Cake When I'm Hungry. How's that sound? A little Memphis.
Yes.
Okay. I want cake when I'm hungry. Lightning when I'm dry. I want cake when I'm hungry. Lightning when I'm dry. Some good man to love me. Heaven when I die. How's that?
I don't have an applause. I'm looking around for the applause.
I do have a single that is original that's coming out on this coming Friday. It's called Dystopian Blues. It was written during a pandemic. Were you there for that? It was weird. That's a weird time. It's called Dystopian Blues. Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, basically anywhere that you can stream music, it's available.
And on the bottom of the screen is her website. Ooh, so make sure you go check it out.
We got the plug right here.
That's right.
Also, you know what else? I know you're a hip hop fan.
Oh, dude. Well, I started in hip hop. I was a rapper.
Of course you were. Of course you were. Because I hear your voice, because you're Brooklyn, because you love the blues. Of course you're a rapper too. It makes sense to me. You can hear my voice and my writing on the new AZ record, Doe or Die 2. I wrote the hook for Never Enough with Rick Ross, and I sang it.
Nice.
And that's me. So if for your hip hop fans out there, you can hear that too.